Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Ramsey, and I'm with Landis-Sky Regional Council, and I want to welcome you to our weekly COVID-19 response call. Before we get started, just a few housekeeping matters. First, this call is being recorded, so want everybody to be aware of that. Also, if you everyone that joins this call will be muted, and you cannot unmute yourself. So if you have any questions for any of our presenters, please enter those in the chat functions in the chat box. If you're unable to do that, you can also text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216 if you have any questions and you're unable to enter those in the chat function. Let you know what will be coming up over the next couple of weeks. On May 28th, we will have Dr. Laura Leatherwood with Blue Ridge Community College. She's the president there, along with Dr. Joseph Barwick, who's the interim president at AV Tech. They will share with us the how COVID-19 has impacted their campuses and their students, and what we can do to better support their mission and their efforts to provide education and training to our region. On June 4th, we'll have Chris Chung, who's the CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. EDPNC is the recruitment retention organization in North Carolina that helps bring business to our state and works in close collaboration with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. So we're excited that Chris can join us on June the 4th. To start off today's call, we're honored to have Drew Christie. Drew represents Governor Cooper in Western North Carolina. And I know Governor had an announcement yesterday regarding the restrictions relating to coronavirus. And I'm sure that'll be part of Drew's update today. So Drew, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate you sharing with our region.
Thank you, Nathan, for allowing me to speak, and thank you, Landis-Sky, for hosting this, and thank everyone for being so attentive and informative at all these calls. So based on the data, Governor Cooper announced yesterday that North Carolina will be ending the stay-at-home orders and moving into a safer at-home phase two, beginning tomorrow, at 5 p.m. Based on the metrics laid out in April by Governor Cooper and Secretary Cohen, North Carolina is evaluating a combination of data that shows the state is stable, but still has increasing daily new lab-confirmed case counts. Phase two is a more modest step than originally envisioned in order to be responsive to the data. So during phase two, the safer at home phase two, the stay at home order is lifted, but the state is moving to a safer at home recommendation, especially for individuals at risk or more severe illness. Mass gathering limits will be no more than 10 people indoors and 25 people outdoors. Restaurants, personal care, and grooming businesses, as well as swimming pools, can open at 50% capacity with other distancing and cleaning requirements. And all of these requirements can be found at the DHHS's website. Bars, gyms, and indoor entertainment venues like bowling alleys and movie theaters will remain closed. Public health recommendations are provided for worship services to practice enhanced social distancing guidelines and other cleaning and hygiene practices. North Carolina has more than doubled the daily testing rate, with more than 8,000 tests completed on a daily average. That's very good news. So that means we're testing more people. With that, however, we do see more positive cases of COVID-19, but that's to be expected. There are now more than over 300 testing sites available across North Carolina, And you can find those at DHHS's website, their testing information website, which is, I believe, right on the home screen. You can find it. We always do encourage people to remember the three W's: wear a face covering, wash your hands at least for 20 seconds as many times as possible, and wait 6 feet apart from other people. There are many frequently asked questions in regards to phase two. I can refer you back to the executive order, which came out, and I can I sent Nathan the frequently asked questions yesterday, and he can share those with everybody, but I'm more than happy to provide those to anybody who needs them as well. Let's see, bear with me one second here. Another big thing is unemployment benefits. As of yesterday, $2.3 billion in benefits have been paid to over 550,000 people, which is great, but there's still a lot more we can do. There are 915,000 people that have filed claims since March 15th. So we're looking to expand the department or Division of Employment Security's hiring practices so we can hire more people. We've started the online chat function to help people get in contact with more folks. So there's still work to be done, but we're making steps on unemployment insurance benefits. And with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you. And as always, feel free to ask me questions in the chat box, and I'll be happy to answer them.
And thank you, Drew. There were a few questions regarding breweries and wineries. So, and I think there was some confusion that I'd seen, different accounts in the media. So will breweries and wineries that do not serve food, will they be allowed to open their establishments for customers?
So in Executive Order 141, in Section 1, which is the definitions, and Definition 1 is talking about bars, what a definition of a bar is. So it means an establishment that are not eating establishments or restaurants, as defined in General Statute 18B-1002 and 6, that have a permit to sell alcoholic beverage for on-site consumption under that same general statute, that are principally engaged in the business of selling alcoholic beverages for on-site consumptions. So that's the broad definition of what a bar is in regards to the executive order. And so based on that definition, winery, tasting rooms, and tap rooms are considered a bar for that definition, and so that they are deemed to be closed.
Thank you so much, Drew. And I know you and the governor's team are working with local groups like Asheville Brewers Alliance, North Carolina Craft Brewers, and others as we go through this time. So we appreciate any guidance and ongoing direction that you can provide for us. Chris Wall with EQV Strategic is with us. And let's see if we can, Chris, are you on the call?
Nathan, I'm on.
Thank you so much for joining us. Chris represents the Council of Governments across North Carolina, both at the federal and state level. And I just wanted Chris to get on to share the latest update from DC and Raleigh regarding potential legislation. You know, our local governments are struggling under the decline in revenue and increased expenses. There has been some support through the CARES Act for those local governments, but they're definitely struggling, and that is true with our educational institutions and others. So, Chris, thank you for joining us today and share with us the latest update from Raleigh and D.C.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Always appreciate getting on these calls. I'll start with the federal government, but on both federal and state, there wasn't a tremendous amount of movement since we were on the phone last time. But we're post HEROES Act, where the House of Representatives passed a $3 trillion COVID relief package that has now been sent to the Senate. However, don't expect the Senate to move on that anytime soon. In fact, I was on a call with the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Richard Neal, and his estimation was that if Congress held true to its typical calendar where they take August recess, don't look for another federal package or expect a federal package until September. And I think the thought process there is the Republicans want to see the impact that the current CARES funding has on the economy, plus the fact that, much like North Carolina, states are starting to reopen and can tailor additional needs or fill additional holes, but also never underestimate the fact that once, as you pointed out, Nathan, once we get into September, right, and local governments are really starting to feel the pinch of the impact that this has had on the economy, that may move the Senate Republicans, who kind of control the cards at this point, to come to the negotiating table with the House of Representatives and get a package moved before the elections, because I don't think anybody wants to go back to their home state and have to answer why they chose not to do anything when folks will most likely be in fairly dire straits. So there's going to be a lot of rhetoric back and forth on the federal level. Mostly will be, just political positioning. But I think, true negotiations will most likely start once we get into July and then, into August, and hopefully have something in September. On the state level, the General Assembly came back into session on Monday. It was a fairly short week. They had votes on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I think just Monday and Tuesday. The House didn't vote yesterday. The Senate was in working yesterday. The Senate worked a little bit this morning, but they're going to come back in next week. There were a number of, probably the biggest thing that happened this week was Senator Berger held a press conference on Tuesday, I believe, where he detailed that they're anticipating a $4 billion budget shortfall because of the coronavirus impact, where they had expected what he considered a substantial budget surplus that they were going to work on. And he was also asked about the current budget situation. Obviously, we don't have a budget right now. There's a stalemate. I think that's, Senator Berger said that he's not putting aside the, potential to try to once again, override the governor's veto. But I think that's pretty much, that ship has sailed at this point, because we're in such a different budget situation that what they're dealing with right now is they're just looking at where we are and kind of making adjustments accordingly. Both the House and the Senate did indicate that they will enter into what they consider a normal budget process. They will look at where we are from a spending standpoint, revenue standpoint, and make adjustments accordingly and move that through. You saw a number of appropriation bills passed, introduced this week to allow them to set the stage for a budget process. They moved bill filing deadline to, the 26th, and just to give members a little bit longer, but don't look for the General Assembly to do anything, really tackle any big pieces of legislation outside of COVID-related activities and budget-related activities, which most likely, I'm assuming, they'll probably all roll into one package. So state and local governments should start to see funds moving out. With the General Assembly appropriating those 2 weeks ago now, you should start to see dollars start to flow in. The one thing I would go back to Senator Berger's comments about a $4 billion shortfall. I think that is, I'm certainly not going to argue with him. I think we all know that the local governments will be in a different situation. But, I always kind of remind everybody because the state did not pass a budget and we are in a continuing resolution, we have $2 billion sitting in the bank in unappropriated funds. We have, we're expecting to receive another $2 billion in unspent CARES-related federal money. We've got $1.5 billion in the rainy day fund, and there's a tremendous amount of money still in the unemployment fund. Now, that may, obviously, that's probably going to come down. So, you know, we're not probably in the as bad a situation from a state standpoint as one may initially think. So we'll just kind of wait and see how the General Assembly is going to deal with those funds that they have stashed in a couple of different accounts here and there. But I think, you know, other than that, they're coming back in next week. I think Monday is Memorial Day. Obviously, we're starting in phase two that the governor announced, and the hopefully things will start to, get to some semblance of normalcy again as we move through this next phase. But that's pretty much the top headlines from this week. We'll just look to see what the General Assembly does from a budget standpoint. They said they'd be in for 4 to 6 weeks. Again, my crystal ball would say I doubt that, right? That they may stay in for 4 to 6 weeks, but I think the General Assembly will be in session throughout the remainder of this year simply because they'll have to deal with some. If the federal government moves, they'll have to come in and do it. And then, of course, if we're back in this situation, right, if the virus were to spike again and we have to go into some shelter in place, the General Assembly will most likely be required to come back to session for that as well. So I think we'll probably be in session for the remainder of this year if you had to make me put a bet on it. Happy to take any questions.
Chris.
Yep.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. Thank you for that update. Just a few things for our local governments, for our municipalities and counties. I know the League of Municipalities, the County Commissioner Association are certainly working closely with the members of the General Assembly and the Governor's Office to try to advocate for their local governments. But for those local elected officials, what's the best thing they can do now because to make it aware of the challenges they're facing?
Well, I think it's, you know, I sound like a broken record, but I still say you've just got to continue citing specific examples of the impact that it is having, right? And the more specific you can get, the better off you will be. And I think that continues to be the message. I don't think there's anything else at this time that's a silver bullet, but if you can continue to convey specifically how this is impacting your community, whether it's, it's staff that you are losing, impacts to local businesses, anything like that will help move the General Assembly, especially as it relates to, the funding went to the counties and not to the cities and towns. So you have to continue making that statement, hopefully to help assist with, the issues that they're facing.
Chris, I know this was on the table before COVID-19 hit, and it appeared like there was some resistance on the Senate side, but there was talk of about a bond referendum to support K-12 schools, universities, and community colleges. Apparently, Speaker of the House Moore, I think, mentioned that possibility on a call yesterday with the County Commissioners Association. Have you heard any discussion of a potential bond, or is that out there? I think in the past, the Senate was the one that was more reluctant to do that.
Yeah, similar situation. There has been some bipartisan talks on the House side on a bond referendum, and we know that that is important to the Speaker. It's just hard to get there hasn't been much discussion on the Senate side, and I think it's just been difficult to get the Senate to focus on anything outside of the immediate COVID relief package right now. But is it a possibility for this session? Absolutely. Anything that the Speaker wants to do, right, is always a decent chance of happening. And I think what's interesting this is he's actively engaged his House Democrats in helping him put that process or that plan forward.
Thank you so much, Chris. We, again, appreciate you bringing this update to us keeping us informed of what's going on. And thank you for sharing some of your time with us this afternoon. Did get a question in the chat regarding the expiration of the executive order regarding the utility cutoffs and whether Land of Sky had any funding for utility assistance. We do not at this time, but I think there will be an ongoing discussion, and if we have some time, maybe we can go back to Drew and see if, you know, I'm sure that's on the governor's radar and others working with our local county human service agencies and other nonprofits in our community. I'd like to now turn it over to Hannah Randall. Hannah is CEO of Manna Food Bank, and they've been just doing amazing work during this time. We've seen an incredible need from our region. Certainly before COVID-19, we had a lot of hunger issues and food insecurity throughout Western North Carolina. And the what's happened with COVID-19 has certainly accentuated those many challenges. So Hannah, are you available for us today to share with us?
I am, Nathan. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. I had a little bit of a time getting on this morning or this afternoon because, of course, it's the time where my computer decided to shut its whole self down, but I'm back in business now. It has been a time like no other, really, at Manna. Before COVID-19, obviously, we were working diligently with all of our 220 partner agencies across our 16 counties in Western North Carolina, not only to get food to people that need it, but working on initiatives like hunger and health and equity and so many other things. And then this happened. And so we really have had to dramatically shift all of our resources towards this crisis because we immediately saw an increased demand. And just to kind of give you an idea of the magnitude of that, through our network, just in April alone, I just looked at some April numbers, we served almost 62,000 unique individuals in the month of April, and that's up 65% since last year, since this time last year, so since pre-COVID levels in general. That has been really complicated by the fact that the supply chain, as many of y'all know, is just in a really difficult situation with food that normally goes to restaurants and venues and schools and stuff like that, suddenly kind of on lockdown. And so for those of y'all that aren't as familiar with Manna, we source food to 220 different partner agencies that are all independent 501c3 nonprofits across Western North Carolina. And we also do some direct distribution to the public through our Manna Community Market, where we go and have a mobile pantry we go to high need places where we don't have a partner agency to get food to the people that need it the most. So last year, we distributed just under 20 million pounds of food to people in need. So when you think about a swing of 65% more people showing up than pre-COVID levels, it's been daunting. But the community really has shown up. So we've had to shift lots of things. We have to shift food supply. Manna is one of the 200 food banks that are part of the Feeding America network of food banks. And every food bank operates a little differently, but we're one that really heavily relies on donations for food, and we don't purchase a lot of our food. Some food banks do purchase a lot of their food, but over 80% of our food is donated at Manna, and that almost evaporated overnight. Most of that food comes from grocery stores, manufacturers, produce pack houses, and things like that, and the government as well. And so, but you can imagine with the pandemic buying behavior, that grocery stores didn't have any of that edible but not sellable food to donate to us. So we have been purchasing, having to purchase food at a rate that I've never seen. We've spent more money on food in the past 2.5 months than we normally do in 2 years. And that's because we want to make sure that we meet that increased need. We've also shifted all of our partner agencies that are still open, and of that, about 190 are still open. So we've shifted all of them with their cooperation and help, they're awesome partners, to low contact or no contact distributions, utilizing a drive-through or walk-up model. We used to do food distributions with a client choice model at most of our partner agencies, because client choice allows people to have that hope, dignity, and respect that we care so much about. And it actually eliminates food waste. It reduces food waste by 50%. But as you can imagine, you can't have people going into a farmer's market style food distribution and picking food and touching stuff and being really close to each other. So our partners have been amazing in figuring out how to do these low contact and no contact food distributions. And then the other kind of big thing that was happening with us is with our volunteer force. So most of our partner agencies either have maybe like one or two staff members at the most, but really more than half of our partner agencies have no staff members. So when we're talking about activating the MANA network, we're really talking about activating a volunteer network of thousands of people. And even at MANA alone, in our warehouse on Swannanoa River Road, we have about 7,000 unique volunteers a year, and about 400 of which are weekly regular volunteers. As you can imagine, those weekly regular volunteers were often folks that were retired and therefore were in a high-risk category when this crisis emerged. So we've worked with the public and done some public appeals to get volunteers in, and that's really worked really well over time. I will say right now we need some more volunteers. We're about 75% capacity on our volunteers. It's a complicated thing to do food sorting and packing also in a social distancing environment, but we do require everyone that comes in our facility to wear face coverings, and we do follow social distancing guidelines and do extreme amounts of sanitation. So a lot of things going on here at MANA, and we're all just trying to truck along. We know that even though we're moving into these phases, and we're really, you know, excited to and hopeful about trying to see the economy reopen, because we know how important that is. We're also aware that this is going to have really long-term impacts for families. When you think about, you know, we've all heard that abstract of people living paycheck to paycheck, and many of us have experienced living paycheck to paycheck. But the reality is that if one or two things go wrong, most of us are one or two situations away from needing help. And so this has, been a situation where families that really were stable aren't anymore. If you just look at the direct unemployment numbers that we were talking about earlier, those are the families that are now showing up at MANA as they have to decide, do I pay for rent or my mortgage or my car payment, or do I pay for food for my family? And our goal is family stability, and keeping people so that they can recover from this situation as they are able to go back to work, if they have work to go back to. And I'll take any questions anybody has as well.
Thank you so much, Hannah, for sharing with us. There was the comments in the chat box about the impressive work of MANA and the team there. So kudos to everyone that have stepped up to support MANA at this difficult time. You mentioned the need for volunteers. Can someone go online, or if someone wants to volunteer at MANA, how do they do that?
That's right, Nathan. They do go online to www.manafoodbank.org, and on the how you can help, you can click on volunteering and sign right up for a shift. We used to do volunteer orientation, but now we do it on the fly while people come in, especially with all these new restrictions and us really trying to keep people safe that do come into our facility to volunteer and keep people safe that are getting that food.
And what are the times available? I assume you open up on weekends, and is that just 8 to 5, or do you allow for volunteers at times beyond that?
We have shifts. We have both morning, afternoon, and evening shifts, 6 days a week right now that are available, and all the open time slots show right when you go onto our website.
And just a follow up question regarding you mentioned having to purchase food, which in the past you haven't done that. I know, you know, there was some funding in the CARES Act for that. There's been some different pots of money through Department of Agriculture, but even with that additional funding, you don't have enough. Sounds like you're running short of funding to purchase all the food that you do need.
Well, right. What we're doing right now, Nathan, is we're really looking forward to some of that funding coming through, both from the North Carolina General Assembly, or did appropriate $1 million to each food bank in North Carolina. So that's really going to help as soon as that funding comes in. And then, of course, also through the CARES Act, MANA runs a federal program called TFAP, which is the Emergency Federal Food Assistance Program. And it allocates additional funding for that. And we just got a waiver from the NCDA to do what's called disaster household distribution, which will allow us to really open up who is able to get that federal commodities of food. We expect to start seeing the federal food come through in July. And so what we're trying to do is meet the gap between now and July with food purchases. The other thing that we're doing is we're working with farmers because we so deeply care about our farmers and making sure our farm communities stay healthy, both financially and just health-wise with COVID-19. So we're working with that Farmers to Families Food Box Program, also known as the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. We're working with the distributors now to source meat and dairy and produce through that program as well. Although I will say that our allocation in Western North Carolina is quite a bit smaller than at least we asked for. But the USDA is being pretty receptive to feedback. I was on a call with the deputy director of the USDA yesterday, and we were talking to him about the things that we're seeing in our network. And so my hope is that that program will continue to improve as it goes along, and that it'll really help. I hope that it'll really help our local Western North Carolina farmers in the end.
And Hannah, to your point, you know, that's the thing we've seen locally and nationally. At the same time, we're seeing greater need for food and more families being impacted by hunger. We're seeing on the farm side, produce farmers are, you know, dumping out their produce or plying them under, dairy farmers pouring out milk. So I know you mentioned the distribution logistical challenges that have come by such a change this quickly. And hopefully we'll be able to transition, because, you know, unfortunately, this is probably not a several month challenge. And so we're fortunate to have Jeff DeBellis with the North Carolina Department of Commerce with us. And so Hannah, thank you for joining this call. And again, thank you for everything you and your team are doing. And we will share the information on how people can volunteer at MANA and support MANA on our Land of Sky COVID-19 website. So thank you for being with us. Jeff, are you available?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Nathan, for having me. Hello, everyone. My name is Jeff DeBellis. Go ahead.
I was just going to say thank you, Jeff, for joining our call. You can introduce yourself, but Jeff is the data guru, the one that understands our labor market information probably better than anyone in our state. And so, you know, one of the challenges we're probably, you know, in the month of March, we saw about 21,000 people file for unemployment in our local area. We know that number now is a lot higher. And we just really appreciate Jeff joining us, because, you know, our economy is probably not going to come back as quickly as we would like, and there's a lot of economic pain out there. So to give us a better indication of what's happening, we just wanted Jeff to join us today. So Jeff, I'll turn the agenda over to you.
Thank you, Nathan. like Nathan said, I'm Jeff DeBellis. I'm with the Labor and Economic Analysis Division at the North Carolina Department of Commerce. And as Nathan said, he wanted me to just come and talk a little bit about what we're seeing with the economy and the economic numbers that are just really coming out to talk about this crisis. As you all know, it's just been a real brutal last 2 months, something that we haven't seen in this state or the nation, certainly in my lifetime. Every major industry has been impacted to some degree. That's not to say that there haven't been individual cases of businesses that are seeing increased volume and are doing fairly well. But for the most part, this has been a broadly shared painful experience with impacts across all regions, the entire state, and the nation. It's affected people at various income levels. All sectors of our economy are seeing, all the major sectors are seeing some drop in employment, including government. That's not to say that everybody is being hit equally hard. Obviously, our high touch services have been particularly hard hit, such as hospitality and retail, and even some of the ambulatory voluntary healthcare services. And those are three areas that can be particularly painful to the Asheville area, where employment concentration in those industries exceeds that of the state and the nation as a whole. There are also industries where we have a lot of low-paying jobs that are impacting a lot of low-wage individuals. And so they're particularly at risk. Now, I know there's been benefits to, you know, both at the federal level for unemployment insurance and then stimulus, but that's temporary. And unless we see an increase in that, they are there's potential for some serious pain as this crisis grows. Small businesses are particularly hard hit here and lack some of the resources that major employers have. But on a good side, it looks like the worst may be coming to an end now, at least in terms of unemployment and job loss overall. We're still likely to see another bad month of economic data. So the employment data is not out yet for North Carolina. That comes out tomorrow. And then for the region in June, June 3rd. But we expect to see, you know, some pretty bad numbers for the month of April, and probably just as bad, if not worse, in May before things get a little bit better. We have seen a little bit of signs of growth, although current and local data is difficult to come by. We're seeing a little bit more consumer spending, a little bit more in job postings, and then we're seeing a little more in travel. Of people getting out, not staying at home as much. Hopefully people are still being safe, but there's a little bit of movement, which can be good if we see it turn into economic activity. But it's still very far from normal. And lessons from the other states that have started to open up and ease restrictions earlier has kind of helped paint the story that this will not be a rapid recovery, and that we shouldn't expect to see a complete bounce back anytime soon. We've seen in some other states have opened up, restaurant activity is still way down, even though restrictions are starting to be lifted. The complete story of what's happening in our economy, it lags. So it's difficult to tell. U.S. figures that were released 2 weeks ago show just unprecedented declines in employment for individuals, jobs, hours worked, and wages. The unemployment numbers that you see don't tell the whole story. Many people have left the labor force, and many others have had their hours deeply cut. North Carolina typically tracks well with the U.S. in economic terms, and given the broad scope of this crisis, I'd expect to see similar impacts in North Carolina as we're seeing across the U.S. So the U.S. number should give you a good broad picture of what to expect. That comes out 2 weeks earlier than the state every month. So if you're looking for signs of North Carolina's economy and recovery, it doesn't hurt to look at the U.S.
Jeff, I heard that North Carolina may possibly be impacted a little more severely because we have a greater concentration in the hospitality tourism sector than the nation, maybe a little greater concentration in manufacturing. Are you seeing that, or are you thinking we're pretty closely tracking with the national numbers?
I think we're going to see some, as a state, I think we'll track pretty close to the national numbers. This is a real broad crisis. Our numbers are not that far off from the nation as far as hospitality and manufacturing and employment. Now, locally, there's some bigger differences. Locally, in the Asheville region, hospitality, retail, healthcare, all are higher concentrations than the nation. And nationally, we saw a 47% decline in leisure and hospitality last month compared to a year ago. So, nearly half the jobs nationally lost in that industry over the year, and with a higher concentration in the Asheville region, that just makes it that much more painful.
Jeff, I'm not a very good gambler, but the latest local number that came out, the Asheville Metro was still tied for the lowest unemployment rate in the state. We were tied with Durham Chapel Hill Metro, I think at 3.6%. This was for March. But my guess is, and that was 61 consecutive months where the Asheville Metro has maintained the lowest unemployment rate in North Carolina. My guess is probably for April, that streak is going to be broken because of our greater concentration in hospitality got hit harder. And based on the industry mix you mentioned, we're probably no longer going to be the lowest unemployment rate in North Carolina.
It wouldn't surprise me that you're right.
Is that a fair guess?
It's a fair guess. But it's not a certainty. It's certainly a good guess. When we're talking about unemployment rate numbers, there's a couple things that are kind of hidden behind that. Like I mentioned, there's people who leave the labor force. So if people don't think that they can get a job and have left the labor force and aren't looking, that may mask the unemployment rate. And being that hospitality is hard hit, where a lot of people can't find employment in that industry right now and may not be looking, you just never know how that's gonna show up in the data. Also, a lot of employers have just cut back wages rather than cut individuals. Whether that happens more in the Asheville area or not, I don't know. Being there's a lot of smaller, more family oriented businesses in that region, you may see a reduction in hours as opposed to cuts in people. So I can't say for certain, but certainly the concentrations in those industries are not favorable this time to the Asheville region.
And to your point, and I think one thing you've made it, provided a better understanding to me, one of the biggest distinguishing factors of our local labor market compared to the state is the number of small businesses that we have. And those small businesses probably have been hit harder. You know, that certainly happened at the national level where smaller employers have been hit harder. And if we extrapolate that to our local area, that's probably the case. Our labor force in our region is just over 200,000. You know, we had about 20,000 claims in March. I know with the number came out today, and one gentleman who was a former economist at the Fed, I think he works with Upshot, part of the New York Times, you know, and certainly it's not a hard number, but he said, you know, this is probably indicative of about an 18.5% unemployment rate nationally. And we know we've had around 1 million claims in North Carolina. And if you do those numbers, what would you say currently our unemployment rate is in the state? I know that's coming out tomorrow, but if you were a betting person, what would you guess that would be?
For April, or are you asking me for April or for May? Or like right now? You're muted. Nathan, I think you're still muted.
Oh, I apologize. A lot of people would like me to remain muted, but what do you think that number will be for April? And then, you know, what do you think it is currently today? And understanding you can't do that with absolute certainty.
Well, I unfortunately can't tell you about April. The unemployment rate is derived out of our division, so I actually know the rate, and I can't tell you that. But I can tell you that, you know, there is the possibility, if not the likelihood, that we may see it even rise a little bit more in May. And that's something that is a guess. So, you know, just as the economist you highlighted said, 18% maybe in May, as opposed to the 14.7 nationally, we may see it, you know, something similar.
And I apologize for putting you on the spot, and I forgot that you have a preview of those numbers. I would say, and this is just from me, and I think our local area probably right now, we're probably between 15% and 20% unemployment, and that's based on, you know, those national trends and the fact that we have a disproportionate share of workers and small businesses in the hospitality sector, and that really hasn't opened up. So that's just my guess, but I think, you know, we thought compared to the Great Recession, I thought I would never go through anything like that again. And I think most of us thought that was a once in a lifetime experience. In some ways, this has been worse than the Great Recession. It wasn't like we had an underlying financial crisis that precipitated it. But how would you compare this with the Great Recession, Jeff? I know DES mentioned in the last 64 days that and this was a few days ago, the Employment Security had mentioned they had processed more unemployment claims in the last 64 days than they did of all of 2009, which was one of the worst years of the Great Recession. They processed more unemployment claims in the last 64 days than they have been for the 6 years prior. In all those 6 years, they processed more claims in, you know, just about 2 months. How would you compare what we're going through now to the Great Recession?
Really, there's no comparison. I mean, they're extremely different. And I wouldn't even say it's in a difference in magnitude as much as just the situation is something that we've never seen before. So typically, recessions are kind of driven by shocks in the economy, like the financial crisis. Where it's impacted, you know, one sector and then, you know, ripples out. Here we've seen, you know, whole industries just completely shut for a period of time. And so so we know that, you know, this is We know that it's gonna take some time to recover, but we don't know how it's gonna happen. So, you know, there's so much uncertainty right now. Typically at this point in a crisis, we'd be looking at, well, where are the green shoots? Where are the industries that really could take off? Everybody's being hit. Industries that we didn't expect. I didn't expect food service. I didn't expect healthcare, government, which is usually a safe bet. All are going to be hit, and we don't. And the problem is there's not a whole lot that we can do about it right now. The growth of the economy is going to be driven off of consumers. Everybody on this call is going to be making a decision as to where the economy goes, and we don't know how people are going to react. We don't know if consumers are going to start spending money. We don't know if there's going to be consumers who are going to stop paying bills. And right now we've seen some of that happening where people have, stopped paying their car payment or mortgage payment for a month. If that happens over several months, then you start creating a financial crisis where banking gets really impacted. We don't know how people are going to feel about travel. As you all know, Asheville is a big tourist area. I don't know the actual numbers of, in tourism in the Asheville region, but I imagine from what I do know about the area, a lot of people come by car. So it's a big region, regional tourist place. Maybe that area comes back faster than say in Orlando or Las Vegas where people come by plane. And so maybe people will want to look for, weekend trips as opposed to week-long vacations, and maybe you'll see an uptick, maybe you won't. We don't know how people are gonna, how this might change living. Are people going to be more interested in small towns, small cities to get out of the big metro areas because they fear for their health safety? We don't know about business. A lot of businesses are allowed to, restaurants are allowed to open up tomorrow. We'll see how many of them actually do. We don't know when they open up and they're allowed to have 50% capacity. Is that going to change the dining experience for customers where people don't feel comfortable being in an empty restaurant? They go for an experience for the crowded restaurant. We don't know about their ability to pay debt. There's just so much that is unknown, that it's hard to predict where and when this will happen. So it's unlike anything that we've seen. The government does have an ability here to, but we don't know whether they're going to prop up consumers, prop up businesses, prop up financial institutions, and if they can, and for how long.
Yeah, we saw coming out of the Great Recession, I mean, North Carolina was hit pretty hard, but, our economy came back pretty good, and North Carolina, by many metrics, over the last several years, was outperforming the nation and many other states. How do you see us compared to our neighboring states of Georgia and South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, going through this crisis? I know, there was a report not too long ago, and that's, not in our area, but it mentioned the Triangle was one of the metros. And I think, there's been some discussion about Charlotte. This could actually be good for business for those communities because companies are looking to get out of those even bigger cities into more mid-size metros, even though Charlotte, I think, came out yesterday that they're now the 15th largest city in the United States. But how are we comparing to our neighboring states?
It's really too early. It's too early to tell. I know, for those who have opened up in a little bit faster and have a little bit more economic activity going on, they're obviously have more economic activity right now. That may come as a cost if they open too soon and we start to see, increase in cases and they have to shut down again. Right now, I don't know if there's any regional advantage to this economy. I think, this is hitting everybody everywhere. Certainly the people in the big cities, the New Yorks, the Los Angeleses, the Chicagos, they're a little bit weary. People have been moving a little slowly away from those big cities and moving to smaller cities in the last couple of years, and that might accelerate. But we don't know how, or where this is going to play out. So it's really difficult to try to speculate at this point.
Well, we really appreciate you sharing with us, and I know it's hard to get difficult to obtain the hard data. We know those unemployment numbers will come out tomorrow. We're disappointed that you weren't able to give us a preview. I think there's probably a federal or state law that prohibits you from doing that. So we understand that. But if your schedule allows in the future, we'd love for you to come back and share with us about your insights. I think what's happened in the past, the Asheville Metro had came back pretty strong, coming out of the Great Recession. We are a drive market, as you mentioned, so most of our tourism is in that respect. And also, we're a community just like the state that's an in-migration community. We have a lot of people moving into our community. That's the source of our population growth. And that's true for, I think, North Carolina as a whole. So if that continues, our area, we'll come back. It just may be a little more challenging. One last question before I let you go. There was a report from the Federal Reserve not too long ago that talked about the impact on low-income families that I think like 40-50% of all families in the U.S. that earned less than $40,000 or $50,000 had someone in their family in that household lose a job. Can you speak briefly to that?
Yeah, like I said, so far this has hit a lot of industries hard that have low wage jobs. And so, the good thing is right now through the end of July, there is an additional $600 federal unemployment, which has probably heard some people say that exceeds the weekly pay that they would get at some of these low paying jobs. That is the case in some instances. It's hard to tell. A lot of people who work in the service sector tend to string together multiple jobs. So it's not just one job that they're receiving income from, but it's multiple. So I think right now, it seems like there's a good number of people are surviving, which is fortunate. Now, when that runs out, then those people will be, really hard hit, and then we'll have a serious problem. So I think from a labor standpoint, from a workforce standpoint, it's interesting in what we do and what our reactions are to help people right now. And until we see growth in particular industries, it's hard to transition people to new lines of work. And we don't know if service industries are coming back in their entirety or if they'll come back leaner and meaner. One piece of advice is that the long-term trends still hold as what we see. So the things that were important before the recession are still important. That means education and the work. I know you've had My Future NC talk, the educational attainment, the need for skilled workers is going to continue beyond this crisis. The growth of non-routine work is something that we will continue to see. It may actually accelerate due to the economy. We may see more automation, for various reasons. We need to have a workforce that's adaptable. So, you know, if there's any positive in this, if we can find a way to work with some of our lower paid, lower skilled workers, especially while they're out of work, to get them into education when they have the time now. And it can be very, very difficult to try to piece together education with work in the service sector when it's not regular hours or when you are trying to work, you know, over 40 hours a week. But if we can get people into the education system, try to get them into, you know, better career paths, then maybe that there's a silver lining in this.
Well, Jeff, again, thank you for joining us. And I think that's a great way to end our call today because, you know, at the end of the day, it's still those fundamentals about community building, economic development, workforce development. While some of the things may change, those long-term trends probably still will hold true. So the communities that best develop their human capital, that best, you know, use their competitive advantages will be the communities that see the best economic prosperity and opportunity for their residents. So I think that is a positive way to end today's call. We again want to thank Drew Christie with the Governor's Office, Chris Wall with the EQView Strategic, Anna Randall with Mana Food Bank, and Jeff DeBellis with North Carolina Department of Commerce for joining us. Again, this call is taped, so we'll try to post it as soon as we can on the Land of Sky website. That's on our COVID-19 page. We'll also post other resources on that page as well. And just remember, next week we will have Dr. Leatherwood with Blue Ridge Community College. That's a great segue of what Jeff was talking about. We also have Dr. Joseph Barwick with AB Tech. Jeff mentioned My Future NC. Our region is a pilot for My Future to increase educational attainment. And I know Dr. Barwick and Dr. Leatherwood can share what they're doing to help build the talent we need and help people reskill so they can support their families. So again, thank you for everyone for joining us. We hope you stay safe, stay well, and we appreciate everything you do for this region. If you have any questions, you certainly can reach out to me at 828-768-3216. You can call and text that number, or you can email me at nathan@landofsky.org. All that contact information is available on the Land of Sky website. So again, have a wonderful day. Try to stay dry in this rainy period we're having, and we appreciate everything you do, and stay safe. Thank you.